So there was this elderly couple, all right, and they were having dinner at another couple's house. And after eating, the wives left the table and went into the kitchen, leaving the two elderly gentlemen there talking at the table in the living room. So they're talking to each other, and the first guy says, "You know, last night we went out to a new restaurant. It was great. I really, really recommend it." The other man said, "Well, what's the name of that restaurant? That sounds good. I want to try it." First man kind of looks, starts thinking, and finally says to his companion, "I don't remember. What's the name of that red flower that you give to someone that you love?" His friend thinks for a minute and says, "A carnation?" The guy goes, No. The other one." The man says, "Poppy?" No. You know, the one that's red and has the thorns?" His friend says, "Oh, you mean a rose?" He goes, "Yeah, that's it." The guy says, he turns toward the kitchen and yells, "Rose, what's the name of that restaurant we went to last night?" Sorry, I like that joke too, but that joke though, as bad as it is, it illustrates a common problem that we all run into at some time or another, and that's a faulty memory. A faulty memory. Scientists say that these memory faults are relatively common, and in most cases, they're not really causes for concern. I want to talk for a minute about human memory. Science, again, tells us that what we call memory consists of two types: short-term memory and long-term memory. Short-term memory is just what the name implies. It's memory that's short-term, memory that's only there for a little while and then goes away. It's information that's held in the brain for only a short time. I want to try an experiment to kind of illustrate that in all of us, this short-term memory. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read 10 words. And what I want you to try to do is remember all 10. No fair writing them down. You just have to use your memory to try to remember them. So don't write them down. All right, ready? Here we go. Penguin. Rainbow. Backpack. Mountain. Housefly. Clock. Ocean. Calculator. Door. Light bulb. Okay, got them? Well, what's just happened as you're listening to those words is that we've stored those words into our short-term memory. However, most of us have absolutely no hope of remembering all of those words after about a minute. We might remember some of them, but we can't remember all of them after about a minute. In fact, most of us will forget some of those words within 15 seconds or so. Do you believe me or not? Well, if you don't believe me, try those words. See if you can remember what those words were. Can you get them all? Can you count on your fingers and get all 10? I don't see anybody like enthusiastically raising their hand saying, "I got it." If you did remember all 10, you're extraordinary. You're way ahead of anyone else, not anyone else, but way ahead of a lot of people, because someone with excellent short-term memory will be able to recall 7, maybe 8 at the most. And that, in fact, is about the limit of our short-term memory. And you can think of it as a post-it note that only that you can only put 7 things on before you run out of time. So that's what short-term memory is. It's kind of like a scratch pad, a temporary place that you hold information. And God created that. He created our brains, the brains of humans, with an area called the prefrontal lobe. And it's that area of the brain right up here at the front, as the name implies, kind of right behind your forehead there. research shows that when you're using your short-term memory, that area lights up. That area is being used a lot in short-term memory. Not the only area, but by comparison, it seems to be much more active. And again, scientists don't know everything about the brain. They don't probably know 10% of what the brain actually does. So that's short-term memory. That's one type of memory. But there's another type of memory called long-term memory. And this is basically, you could think of it as sometimes as short-term memory that's been stored. Okay? Long-term memories are thought to be formed in two different ways. The first way is by repetition. Now, if we were given a chance to look at those 10 words that we had earlier, what we would do in order to put them into our long-term memory is sit there and repeat them over and over again until we remembered them. And what we're doing when we do this, we're building and strengthening connections in our brain, and that's what's causing those things to remain in our long-term memory. We're altering and changing the chemical composition of our brain so that we can retrieve that information at a later time. It's very miraculous when you think about it. These types of long-term memories where we're doing that repetition, that learning, they're called semantic memories. And you can generally think of a semantic memory as an accumulation of everything we've learned in one way or another. It can be kind of, in a very general, broad sense, be thought of as book smarts. Okay, you're reading a lot of information in a book, or you're someone's telling you this is a cat, this is a dog, as you're growing up. It's that kind of information that someone's teaching you or you're learning from somewhere. Now, there's another way, though, that things can be put into long-term memory, and that's through experience. This type of memory is called episodic. These types of memories get committed to long-term memory when an experience impacts us one way or the other. For example, when we learn of the death of a loved one, what happens? We remember that moment. That moment is instantly engraved into our long-term memory. Or when tragedy strikes, such as a president being assassinated, or the Islamic terrorist of September 11, 2001, that attack. Those things, where we were, what we were doing, are generally burned into our brain when something like that happens. What we were doing or where we were is imprinted into that long-term memory. But it's not just tragedies. It's not just tragedies, obviously. Anything that makes a deep impact is in there. Our marriage day, maybe the birth of a child, an emotional moment with a good friend. You're sharing something that you might remember. And we can instantly recall these moments of time as if we were there again. So that's the two types of long-term memory, semantic or regular learning, and episodic, a memory gained through a powerful event or a happening. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 19. We're going to do a little test. Exodus chapter 19. It's not a hard test, believe me. In Exodus 19, this happens just before the Lord is going to speak the Ten Commandments to the children of Israel. And beginning in verse 9, he begins to tell Moses what's going to happen. He's going to tell Moses how this whole process is going to go down with him giving the Ten Commandments. So Exodus chapter 19, verse 9, and the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people." I'm going to skip down to verse 16. "Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. Go ahead and skip. Go to the Exodus chapter 20. This is Exodus 20 is where God gives the Ten Commandments, but we're going to skip down to verse 18, just to emphasize the situation here. Exodus 20, 18. Now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Here's the test. Here's the question. What kind of long-term memories did the Israelites have about what happened here? Was it semantic or was it episodic? Episodic, most likely. This was a tremendous event. Tremendous. It was traumatic, probably to some. It was awe-inspiring. It made a deep impact on people, so deep and so powerful a memory that it eventually found its way in on paper. And you can imagine the people that witnessed that, saying years later, saying, you know, I remember being there on that mountain just like it was yesterday. We didn't know what was going on at all. There was just like thunder, lightning, smoke. I'll never forget that. And if there was such a thing as social media back then, maybe every year people would talk about what they were doing on that day when the Lord came down on the mountain. You know, just like today we talk about what happened when something big happens. Let's try another one, this time in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, the Israelites are being reminded about this experience that they had when the Lord came down on the mountain. So, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9, only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And teach them to your children and your grandchildren, especially concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children. Then you came near and stood at the foot of the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire to the midst of heaven with darkness, cloud, and thick darkness. Now I think it's interesting that in verse 9, they're told to be careful not to forget what they saw. In other words, that episodic memory that they had when they saw the great spectacle on the mountain, they're being told to go back and think about that, to revisit that memory, to reinforce that memory in their mind. And not only that, but to teach that to their children, to tell their children and their about it as well. Go up to Deuteronomy chapter 6, couple chapters up. I'm going to read verses 6 through 9 of Deuteronomy chapter 6. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. So, concerning reminding themselves of the things they saw and teaching their children and grandchildren, what type of long-term memory are they using to create this memory? Semantic, right. what they're doing is they're putting up reminders everywhere. They're basically repetition. They're talking about teaching their children and grandchildren. Repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, so they don't forget it. God designed us, and it's important to remember that He designed us. He designed our brains. He knows how we operate and how we operate best. He knows what the machinery of our bodies are capable of. He knows what we need. So, in God's interactions with us, when He wants us to use our memories. And He uses both methods of long-term memory, semantic and episodic, to reveal Himself to us and to teach us things about Himself. If we think about that, it's pretty obvious when we think about it in those terms. And we can make it obvious by thinking about the weekly Sabbath and the annual holy days. These things create both episodic and semantic memories. Now think about it. Week after week for the Sabbath and year after year for the holy days, we learn while we're at services, while we're reading, whatever it is, we're reminded about the Lord Jesus Christ through His holy days. And we make other kinds of memories. We make the episodic memories from going to these services, from the fellowship and getting together. And when we think back on feasts we've been to or whatever other holy days we've been to, we can probably find a memory that was implanted in there from an episode we had, an interaction with someone else or something that happened. We'll have memories of that. I want to relate a couple stories from my calling that illustrate the episodic way that God worked with me. And I have many clear memories which are burned into my brain, and we all do. We all have different episodic memories that are burned into our brain. But I want to kind of highlight three of them to show how God puts those memories in there and to help guide and to help teach us. The first one happened I don't know how long before I was coming to church, months maybe, I don't know, a year, whatever it was, but I remember, and this is one of those things that are burned into my mind, sitting upstairs in the old house, and my computer at that time was up in our bedroom. And I remember sitting up on my computer late at night and reading about the Ten Commandments. Diane was asleep, I'm almost certain of that, and I remember as I'm sitting there reading, coming to the realization that if there's a God, and if the Ten Commandments are true, then they are to be followed not only in letter, but also internally. And it was at that moment that I realized that I was a profound sinner. I realized that even though my outward appearance, my outward life, Some would say, yeah, you're living an okay life or a relatively righteous life. I wasn't. I was a profound sinner inside. And I had and was routinely violating every single commandment, if not physically, then assuredly spiritually. And this was the kicker, if that realization was true about the Ten Commandments, then there is no way that I could deny the Sabbath commandment. You can't cut that out. If everything else applies about God's truth to the Ten Commandments, then it just as surely applies on the Sabbath commandment. And that's that realization, that moment in time, that's one of those things that's burned, etched into my brain. There's another memory I had of sitting in the parking lot of the Meyer store in Grand Haven, and I was working for the time at Track Corporation. And I would go, this was the summer before I started coming to church. I started coming to church that fall, but this was the summer before I started coming to church. And I was actually reading this book right here that I had sent away for called Transforming Your Life, The Process of Conversion. And I remember reading that book, and And I don't want to make this sound more dramatic than it was, because it wasn't like, but it's kind of like a light, you know, and it's probably just the same when someone has an idea, how they show a little light bulb going off in someone's head. That's probably what this was. This big light bulb went off in my head as I came to the realization that I had to change my life from what I was to what God wanted me to be. That realization that where I was wasn't where God wanted me to be, that I had to find out where God wanted me to be, what kind of man God wanted me to be. And at that time, I probably didn't think a better man, but I knew it had to be a different man than what I was. And again, that's another a moment in time that's burned into my head. The third one was my first day of church in Comstock Park, okay, when we used to attend up in Comstock Park. And I knew that there was a meeting there from talking to Mr. Graham, but I had no idea what to expect in the service. I didn't know what the format was. I didn't know nothing about how things were going to be. So I went in late, of course, because the songs were already started, because that's what you do when you're new. You don't want to walk in and have to talk to people, right? So you walk in after the service is already underway. And again, this is all burned into my mind. I went over to the left side of the room, probably about three-quarters of the way back, because somebody else was sitting in the back or around the back. Everybody's already singing. I'm kind of like looking around like, okay, well, what do I do? And I remember Mr. Gene Miller coming up with a songbook, and then I'm like, still don't know what to do. Then I remember Simon Warfel smiling at me and showing me the page that I had to turn to in the book. Okay? Burned in my mind. Okay? And that's amazing what can happen. Another part about that service, I don't remember much else about that service, but I remember leaving. And when you're a new person, you're evaluating everything. Okay? And you're looking for reasons. Well, at least in my case, I'm looking for reasons not to come back. Okay, I wasn't looking for reasons to keep going. I was looking for reasons not to come back. Okay? So I remember leaving and I'm walking to my car and I'm in the parking lot and Connie was, Connie Waringa was talking to someone else out in the parking lot. I don't remember who it was. It was another lady at the time. And as I walked by, she smiled and she said, "Have a happy Sabbath." And when we hear that phrase in church, we don't think anything of it. I mean, it's just everybody says that. But this was the very first time in my life that I had heard those particular words strung together in that order. I had never had anybody in my life wish me a happy Sabbath. So I was very cynical at that time, and I'm still working on that to a certain extent. And so my very first instinct was to say something smart-alecky back, okay? But I didn't, because what happened was that the way that she said it and the way that it was phrased made me pause and realize that there was an entire culture, an entire way of looking at the world, and an entire way of living life that was completely foreign and different from the life I was living. And it was conveyed just in that one greeting, that one sentence. Again, that's a moment of time that just burned into my mind because of what somebody said or did. And like I said, we all have stories like this. We all do. We can think back on our church life and think back on all those episodes. But they're all put there in place by God for us to help to remember Him. You know, there's another great thing about memory that can be a real blessing, and that is that we can control the memories that we make. We're in control of the memories we make. And furthermore, we can control and alter the memories that we already have. How is that possible? Let's turn to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. How do we control that? not mystical mind control, nothing like that. So don't start freaking out if you're thinking, oh, Doug's going to get into mystical mind control. Not true. Colossians chapter 3, verse 14. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word and deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. If we're doing this, even on an irregular basis, in and out of church, how can our memories that we create ever be bad? How could they ever be bad if we're doing that? If we're taking heed to always do those things? Let's turn to Philippians chapter 4 for another look at that. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 of Philippians 4 says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Basically, it's saying, look for the good in everything. Think about the good. Don't think about the bad. Bad things, yes, happen to us. But if we're only concentrating on the positive, we cannot, again, help but to create good, wholesome memories. Science, again, has shown that every time we access a memory, we change it a little bit. It's altered a little bit. And in fact, they've proven that false memories can be implanted in people through suggestion, sometimes through hypnosis. And it's such that after a little while, these false memories, people actually believe that these things happen to them. Okay? They think that they're genuine memories that they've always had. And this can work to the good, or it can work to the bad. We can dwell on past hurts and magnify them in our minds and twist the real truth so that every time we replay that memory, we're the victims. We're the victims in our memories. Or we can actually change that memory. Instead of dwelling on a bad memory and going back to that moment that hurt us, whatever it was, we can try looking at it from a different perspective. Imagine, for example, that person that gave that hurt or that slight, that it had nothing to do with us, that they were a bad person. That it had nothing to do with us, that they were having an off day. That it had nothing to do with us, that we misunderstood what they said. Whatever it was, think of the good of a person or of a situation and block out the bad. If we do that every time, we're changing and altering those long-term memories we have. And those bad memories will fade and the good memories that we're creating will be replaced. We'll replace them. However, there's a problem with this that God is well aware of, with being able to change and alter our memories. It works the other way, that we can forget things that are good as well. Changing memories is what God doesn't want us to do in certain cases. He wants us to follow His commandments, in fact, in order to not forget about Him. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Found this very, very interesting when in the discussion about memory, this verse in particular, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 11. It says, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today." Read those words again. Those are pretty profound words for the church. Beware that you do not forget the Lord, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ, by not keeping his commandments, judgments, and statutes. In other words, if we ignore what the Lord God tells us to do, we will forget him. That is profound. That is profound. And when we forget him, what do? We turn to the religions of the world. We turn to worldly pursuits. We turn to worldly pleasures. Verse 12, "Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end." This is a description of what every Christian goes through. Every Christian. This is what God does for every Christian. He leads us out of the slavery of sin. He feeds us. He humbles us. He shows us that we're not all that we think we are. And in that process, we become richer. Not physically richer, but spiritually. We enter into the promised land, a land of peace and contentment. What we had spiritually before God and what we have spiritually after God, there's no comparison. We're a million times richer than we were before. But if we forget God, if we stop doing what he tells us to do, if we stop doing his laws, stop keeping his commandments, stop remembering him, then we have what happens in verse 17. "Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth." We question God. We say, we look at the contentment and the peace that God gave us and that we gained through God. But we delude ourselves into thinking, you know what, I did this myself. You know, God had nothing to do with this. I just took some self-help techniques and applied them to my life. And we think that we figured out the secret to life. And we think that this, since we're already there, since we already have this wealth, that we don't have to involve God by keeping all these stupid commandments anymore or these stupid rules. You know, I mean, I've got it. I feel so good about myself right now that I'm past it. Thanks, God. I'm on my own now. Sayonara. Verse 18, "And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish." Brethren, we may laugh at our faulty memories, or we might get worried about our faulty memory. But when it comes to God, he's given us a memory and the resources we need so that we can know him and remember him. He designed us so that we can store information about him that will allow us to grow up into the people that he wants us to be. He wants us to be a certain way, and he's given us these resources. So let's fill our mind with the good, and let us never forget God.